Thanks, Doma T. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And Father's Day is this Sunday. I remember it well when I had my first son, Michael, 19 years ago. Jim and I did not know what to do. But boy, I think Jim changed more diapers than I did.
Good for him.
And you, of course, remember the day your daughters were born.
Yes.
All right, let's introduce our guest, and then I have a bone to pick with you.
All right.
David McGlynn is here, author of this really great book, One Day You'll Thank Me, Lessons from an Unexpected Fatherhood. First of all, David, welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
We will talk about your book, but I have to tell you, we were talking off the air, and you have two boys. And I have two boys, and we were kind of commiserating about sometimes they're not really perfect.
Right.
We're proud of them. They're great kids, but they're a handful sometimes.
Absolutely.
Bill sits back. He goes, yeah, everybody said, you know, when my girls are teenagers, just wait. You're still waiting. You've never had any problems.
They've been really good.
You're either a liar or have to ask your wife, Terry.
I think she would say the same. You know, everybody who said, yeah, they're great now, but give it a year, give it 2, give it 3. They were really very, very good. I feel bad because I know I know all of our friends who have boys, and that I will include both of you in this, age at a much more rapid rate than we do. Our friends look like they're 30 years older than us who had boys.
You know? Well, you got very lucky, I would say.
Yeah. You know. Because it's not, I mean, you know this, because now your sons are how old? 13?
So now they're 13 and 11.
All right.
When the book finishes, they're 11 and 9.
So isn't there this need to establish dominance, even within the family? Boys have this weird need of being very territorial for some reason.
You know, I think that's absolutely the case, that they have this sort of, you know, kind of bucking the herd kind of mentality. My sons are also, even though they're 2 years apart, they were until about a year ago really close in size. Mm-hmm. And so this like need to dominate each other, which was never one way. It wasn't just the older boy trying to like master the younger one, was always a sort of part of their growing up. So from the time they were 2 and 4, they were at each other. We described our house as an Irish midget wrestling match like, all the time. You know, flying squirrels off the sofa and stuff sort of sweeping off the coffee table.
Right.
Here's something I didn't understand being the mother of two teenage boys. They're 3.5 years apart, almost 16 and 19. And do your boys, like, physically fight?
Oh, yeah.
I never saw that
constantly.
Before. And you did that with your brother?
All the time.
Yeah. I cannot stand it.
McMahon used to come to our house and call the fights. It was amazing.
And then I hear my husband going, you guys, this stresses mom out. They don't care.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They and then they'll lay next to each other playing video games, I bet, a minute later or
something. You know, one of my favorite moments is that this has happened more than once, in which they have been at each other so much that we have, on occasion, moved the furniture out of the way, made them take off their shirts and shake hands and then go at it.
Really?
And the rule is whoever cries first and says, I'm done, loses. And so it's over. You have an automatic tag out.
I love you.
But then, you know, they can go. And they will fight to the death. And, you know, big slap on the belly.
Where it leaves a handprint?
Oh, yeah. You can see the whole Superman insignia, only it's a handprint. And they'll just, you know, they'll fight until someone is, you know, almost bleeding.
Now,
and
we used to ask our dad, every year we would ask both of our parents if we could have boxing gloves as a Christmas present.
Right.
And they would say, no, absolutely not. We're not letting that happen.
You know, sometimes you have to bleed it out a little bit.
I think you're right.
And I think that's probably true with some of the bad language, as well as some of the sort of physical roughhousing.
Yep.
They need to just get it out.
You know what's so hard about being a parent? You say the bad language. Bill, you know I swear a lot.
Oh, yeah, I've heard you swear once or twice.
I've sworn in front of my kids. It happens. Yet I still cringe a little bit when my kids swear, but that's just all part of growing up. We did it. Do you feel weird?
Well, I don't want them to swear in public.
There's a time and a place.
There's a time and a place. I don't want them to swear where someone might judge them for it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I wish I could say that we were always, you know, clean-lipped around the house. That's just not always the case.
Yeah.
And there's a moment in which, you know, we'll sort of let them have it. We have what we call cuss time.
Wait,
I am moving into your house. I'm telling you.
Explain the rules of cuss time.
So cuss time is we will have dedicated moments of time, 5 and 10 minutes at a time. Often when we're in the car, when you're in the car, you're contained, and they can just, you know, say whatever they want, and you know you can
anything.
There are probably 3 words that they are not allowed to say, and I won't name them, but you could guess them.
Yeah.
Everything else is free reign.
Yeah.
And they can get it out. And one time we did it. We were driving to a wedding from Wisconsin to to Minneapolis. And so we were on the bridge that goes across the Mississippi River. And I said, okay, for the duration of that bridge, you can say whatever you wanted. And it was just like, you know, truckers at a strip club.
Yeah.
You know, cussing the back of the car. And I think they were like 7 and 5 at the time. And they were just, you know. And the funny thing is that they went through all the bad language.
Yeah.
Then at the end, the little one said, I've got one for you. Holy crab cakes. You know, and that was his, like, I did it. That was the bad word that he'd been waiting to say. Wow. You know?
It's a lot of work raising kids. I didn't think it was going to be as hard as it was. But the title of your book holds true. One day you'll thank me, and one day they will.
I hope so.
Do you think they will? Because I don't know that they will.
Don't you thank your parents for things now?
It comes under the bracket of understanding. Like, there's a lot of things that a parent will throw down and say, you can't do this or you must do this.
Right.
You go, what are you talking about? And then one day it hits you, oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
I would have cut my hand off if I would have done that.
So there's that. You know, the other side of it is I hope that they will see one day, if they don't see it now, that I always paid attention.
Yeah.
You know, I recognized them for who they were at the time that they were going through whatever they were going through. And that means when they were little, but then even as they grew. And as the conversations become more complicated,
right?
You know, I'm not perfect by any stretch. I mean, trust me. But I do try to see them for the people that they're trying to be.
You know what worked for me? On more than one occasion, I'd say to the girls, if we were disagreeing about something, I'd say, this just proves that I care about you. Because if I didn't care about you, I'd let you do it and think about that. There's a lot of parents who just not care enough to change this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
The amazing thing about kids that I've learned having teenagers now is, as a parent, before you go through it, you think, boy, they're going to need me so much when they're babies because they rely on me to eat, to change their diapers. But honestly, this is where our kids need us the most, is the teen years when they're turning into young men or women.
That's right. You know, my wife and I were just talking about this yesterday, that when kids are little, especially when they're babies, their needs are all physical. And as they grow, it slowly transitions from physical need to emotional need. And now, you know, as my sons are moving into their teenage years, they can do almost everything physically on their own, including, you know, make themselves food. We joked that the 11-year-old could drive us home if one of us had too much to drink. I mean, he's sort of that
capable.
That's
our family.
But they need emotional support. And as they're, you know, especially when you're getting into puberty, your emotions just go crazy and your hormones are sort of raging.
Did they avoid showers for a while? Did they go through that phase? Because mine did. And now, just listeners, in case you run into them, they do shower daily. But there was a while, and everybody kept saying, oh, you'll laugh about this later. It's like, just take a shower.
We waffle between no shower and excessive showering.
Yes.
So one doesn't want to go at all, the other wants to go like four times.
That's fun.
Day.
Yeah. That's excellent. The book is called One Day You'll Thank Me. David McGlynn is our guest. If you have any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. We'll take those next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Father's Day is this Sunday, and we have David McGlynn in the studio with us. The book is called One Day You'll Thank Me, and he's going to be doing a live book signing and reading tonight at 6:30 at the Bookstall, 811 Elm Street in Winnetka. The event is free. You can go to thebookstall.com. Now, parts of this particular book has been featured in Men's Health, the New York Times, Real Simple, which is Martha Stewart's magazine, and Oprah magazine.
Wow.
That's right.
Congratulations.
And Parents
on all
magazine
those.
And a few other places. Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Yeah.
I know your writing in the past has been predominantly fiction. This time these are based on true stories.
That's
they
right.
are true stories. How do the boys feel about being featured in a book?
You know, so we had a couple years ago a long conversation about whether they would be okay with this.
Yeah.
And they said, do it.
Really?
You know, let's give it a whirl. And so then as these pieces appeared in the magazines, I got to read them, especially the older one who was, you know, kind of older in school and more ready to read them. And they would laugh. And I think, you know, now he would say at 13 that he's not so sure he wants me to keep writing about them.
Yeah,
but I think they like these stories that go backwards in time. So
when they
see them as younger kids.
Good.
Yeah.
And we have a rule at our house now, because before, when they were younger, you could talk about your kids,
right.
whatever. Now it's like, you know, is this safe for air? Can I talk about this? You have to ask their permission as they get older.
I think we've just now hit that that stage. And in some ways, stopping the book where I did, which is when my older son is about to go to junior high, seemed about a sort of natural stopping
sure.
point for that.
Yeah.
Junior high, they come into Instagram and Snapchat accounts and friends
yeah.
and, you know, all the other things that make them start to have true private lives.
What do you see? What parts of yourself do you see in them?
Well, so my older son is, he can be kind of uptight,
mm-hmm.
and I wish I weren't that way, but I have a little bit of that. He can be kind of obsessive about, you know, for him it's like his clothes and tags on his t-shirts, and I'm more about, you know, kind of shoes and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So more brand names and
well,
style.
Well, it's not the brand names. It's like the way they fit, right? If they don't fit quite right, then you just, like, I can't get over a pair of shoes that don't fit right.
And do they cut the tags off their shirts?
The older one does.
Yeah, my younger one does.
The older one does, yeah.
It bothers them.
I'm a lifelong swimmer. The little one is a really good swimmer, in part because I've always taken him to the pool just to sort of burn some of their energy out. He also has, the little one has a really kind of sharp, quick sense of humor.
Doesn't that make you proud?
It does.
You see that?
Yeah,
yeah.
It does. He's very funny. He can bend language.
Oh, good.
And he tells a good...
Holy crab cakes.
Holy crab cakes. He tells a good joke. Yeah, we were watching a show one time in which a woman, it was like one of those home repair shows,
yeah.
and a woman was moving a heavy piece of furniture. And she had on a tank top, and she looked down at her arms, and she said, "Is there a vet nearby? Because these pythons are sick." So about a week or so later, the little one came up to me and said, "Hey, Dad, is there a vet nearby?" And he flexes his bicep, "Because my panthers are pissed."
Didn't quite get it right.
And he totally screws it up, but it made it like way, way funnier.
Yeah.
So then my older son started to tease him, and for several months we were teasing him about getting to this joke run. And so he started telling like bad jokes.
Yeah.
You know, and is there a plumber nearby because it's raining? You know, no one could get it quite right. And finally the little one looked at us and said, "Is there a chicken nearby? Because I've got your mom."
What?
Wow.
Which is like the weirdest joke ever, but the way he said it was just so... perfect.
Yeah.
Right? It's,
you know, that's beautiful.
Why did the chicken cross the road? Is there a vet nearby? And yo mama.
Yeah.
All at once.
Everything was there.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Really funny.
The weirdest thing about having kids, I think, is to, you know, have two boys that are, or two girls, or just two kids that are entirely different.
That's right.
In your head, you're thinking, you know, I've raised one. This is going to be the same. Oh, no. Completely different.
Yeah, you think you've got it figured out with one,
yeah.
and then you've got to go and do the other. And in some ways, you know, the book talks about that parenthood is kind of a constantly changing routine, and children are endlessly moving targets.
Right.
You know? And I think that I started out imagining that I had these principles and ideas that we were going to live by, you know, and what parent doesn't. And then you get into it and you realize, well, I'm going to have to improvise.
Yeah.
And in my case, I usually had to take my idea, screw it up a couple times, learn from it, and then go back and figure out some other way to come at the problem.
Wouldn't you agree, though, when all is said and done, I know your kids are just halfway through growing up, they're 13 or 11, but when you look back, you go, I wouldn't trade this for anything.
Oh, no, that's the best stuff.
Yeah,
all the mistakes and the crazy chaos, that's all the stuff that's the really sweet stuff.
I worked with this woman at another radio station who had a ton of kids and a ton of grandkids, and when Michael was first born, both my husband and I worked there, we didn't know what to do, and she said, the only advice I can give you is just love them and try your best. Would that be good advice?
I think that's really the only advice, you know, that you have to just keep showing up. And, you know, I think every parent will screw it up one way or another. And sometimes you screw it up in like little cute funny ways, and other times
there are big ones.
There are big ones, and you've got to try to untangle, you know, whatever that is. But if you just keep showing up.
And what about you know, a lot of times I know men have a difficult time admitting they're wrong. Don't you think it's an important thing to admit to your kids, I made a mistake?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, it's one of the reasons that there aren't a lot of fatherhood books out there. Because in order for a book to have any kind of teeth to it, you have to get your main character, who in this case is the author, into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it can be hard for a dad or many men to admit that they thought they had it figured out and then they screwed it up. And I'm not perfect at that, but I do try to admit when I'm wrong.
David, great meeting you.
It's been great to be here.
The book is great. One Day You'll Thank Me by David McGlynn. And then tonight there is a book signing. Explain away on how people can see this.
Yeah, so it's going to be at the Bookstall in Winnetka, 6:30 p.m. Chicago and L.A. author Chris Erskine is going to be with me as well. So he has a new book out. We're going to be doing it together. If you are in the area, it'd be great to have people come out. I'll read for a little while, so you'll get to hear about a 10 or 15 minute taste of the book. Mm-hmm. And then I'll put my name in every book.
Beautiful.
And then Father's Day gifts for all the dads out there.
It's a great Father's Day gift.
Great to meet you.
It's great to be here.
Thanks, David. All right, a quick break, some news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.